Welcome to HaMikdavar, Parshas Bamidbar, the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. And what I wanted to start off with tonight is the Hakdama, the introduction that the Netziv gives to Sefer Bamidbar. As we know, to each of the five Chumashim, the Netziv gives a Hakdama, an introduction, and there are many, many, you know, basic ideas about the Sefer that the Netziv puts down from the very beginning in his Hakdama, in his introduction. So, writes the Netziv, Zat Sefer Nikra b'fi HaMishnah Yom Perek Zayin Ve'od Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Sol Tadaf Lamed Vav Chumash HaKudim V'chein Kosov Bahag. Right, even though we call this Sefer Bamidbar after the opening couple of words, nonetheless, Chazal make reference to it as the Chumash HaKudim, the Chumash of counting. And in fact, we know the name which is commonly used in English, numbers, is really, you know, just the translation of that. Now, says the Netziv, why is it called numbers, Chumash HaPkudim? V'nirsham v'das Rabboseinu inyan shnei HaPkudim shebizah sefer. Because apparently the two times that the Jewish people are counted, once here in the very beginning in Parshas Bamidbar, and once later on in Parshas Pinchas, apparently that left its impression upon Chazal as being the salient point of the Sefer. And the truth is, says the Netziv, you have to ask why. Right? I mean, okay, good, the Jews are counted in Bamidbar, the Jews are counted in Pinchas, but, you know, I think if you ask the average person what happens in the fourth book of the Torah, the fact that the Jews are counted twice would seem to be a relatively minor point. I mean, after all, says the Netziv, Yoser Mishar Dvar Mashmuchad Vizat Sefer, Meraglim, Berkas Bilam, the Odarbe. The whole story of the Meraglim is here. The whole episode with Bilam is here. Again, if we wanted to add to that, Korach is here. You know, Miriam and her Lashon Hara against Moshe Rabbeinu is here. The sin of Moshe Rabbeinu with the Rach is here. I mean, you know, there's no shortage of events that take place in Sefer Bamidbar, which are basic events, but you know, why did Chazal choose to focus on the Pkudim? So says the Netziv, Mishum de'ikr zeh sefer hu amachlif u'mishana halichos am Hashem b'chayei ha'olam me'ol shehigiu le'eretz Yisrael min haderech she'alchu bamidbar. The major point of this Sefer, says the Netziv, is to trace how the lifestyle of the Jewish people changes from the time that they are in the Midbar till they come to Eretz Yisrael. This, after all, is the Sefer that basically, chronologically, covers the most time, you know, out of the last four Chumashim. Maybe with the exception of the beginning of Shmos, right? But it's in Sefer Bamidbar that we go from, you know, the Jewish people who have just left Mitzrayim to 40 years later when the Jewish people are poised to go into Eretz Yisrael. There are 40 years that elapse during the course of the Sefer. We go from the Dar Deya, we go from the generation that left Mitzrayim and received the Torah, to the next generation, the generation that's about to come into Eretz Yisrael. And the change, says the Netziv, is a staggering one. Shibamidbar hayu misnagim b'midas tiferes. In the Midbar they traveled with all of God's glory surrounding them. Shaholach liyamin Moshe. God's glory went at the very right hand of Moshe. Shulagamre lemailo mehalichos hateva. In the Midbar, the lifestyle of the people was a supernatural one. Right? We're learning Sukkah between Mincha and Ma'ariv. Right? So they were surrounded by Nonei Akovah. They drank water from a be'er. Right, you know, that miraculously followed them wherever they were. They had man that came down from the heavens. Everything about the Jewish people's existence in the Midbar was miraculous, was supernatural. Simlas cholovol some olecha. Their clothes didn't wear out. Veraglachov lo vodseka. You didn't get any sores on the bottom of your feet. You know, you were just protected by the Ribbono Shel Olam throughout the time you were in the Midbar. That's in the Midbar. Uveres Yisrael holchu b'derech hateva. But in Eretz Yisrael, when they came into Eretz Yisrael, as great as it was to come into Eretz Yisrael, it was a total change. They stopped being supervised by God's supernatural, miraculous presence, and all of a sudden, everything, you know, came into the realm of Teva, of the regular orders of nature. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was watching over them, but kivyachol from a distance, God's presence was somewhat hidden. Coming attractions, says the Netziv, we'll see already that even during the 40th year that the Jewish people were in the Midbar, there began gradually for this change to take place. You know, they gradually went from being a people surrounded by the supernatural to being a people surrounded by that which was natural. Right? Note, says the Netziv, when the Jewish people at the end of the 40 years fight against Sichon and Og, at least what's described in the Torah are totally natural wars. The Jews are miraculous, but you know the Jews are victorious, but they're victorious in a normal, natural fashion. Gone are the miracles that take place when the Jews leave Mitzrayim. Gone are the miracles that take place when they fight against Amalek, right? Where miraculously Moshe Rabbeinu was holding up his hands and they're like, no, the Jewish people fight a war, you know, and they win in a natural fashion. The God Hamate lo haya od biad Moshe tamid, and leisat sarech lefi achreach Moshe beyarnu sham. You also notice, says the Netziv, that the Mata, the staff of Moshe Rabbeinu, which plays such a prominent role earlier in everything that happens back in Sefer Shmos, the Mata almost entirely vanishes from view towards the end of the 40 years that the Jewish people are in the desert. The only time it really comes out is the time that it gets Moshe Rabbeinu into trouble, right? When he takes out the Mata and hits the rack with it. Otherwise, the Mata really vanishes from view. Again, we'll get the Parshas Chukas. We'll talk about that a little bit more. The Alzah Shinui, Hamitsuyan Bazaar Sefer, Amru Chazal Bebreshis Rabba Perigimel, Vayavdel Elokim Ben Oro Ben Achoshach Ze Sefer Bamidbo, Shumavdil Ben Yosei Mitzrayim Ben Boi Ha'aretz. To buttress this idea that Sefer Bamidbar represents the transition from the generation that left Mitzrayim to the generation that's going to come into Eretz Yisrael, and the distinction between those two generations, he quotes a beautiful Medrash. The Medrash says, Bereishis Rabba, what does it mean in the beginning of creation, Vayavdel Elokim Ben Ha'or Ben Ha'choshech, that God distinguished between the light and the darkness? That's Sefer Bamidbar. Because Sefer Bamidbar distinguishes between the light, the generation that left Mitzrayim, and the relative darkness, the generation that comes into Eretz Yisrael, where they're no longer benefiting from God's direct presence in quite the same way. Now again, halavai, we should be on the madrega of the Boi Ha'aretz, the Choshech, quote unquote. But you see Chazal already, you know, ascribe this role to Sefer Bamidbar, the Sefer of transitions, you know, to show us how we get from one generation to the next. Why does the Medrash refer to the generation that left Mitzrayim as Or, as light? Because they benefited from the light of God's presence. By the time they came into Eretz Yisrael, God's Hashkacha was there, but it was covert. It wasn't obvious anymore. The only time that you would see God's presence when they came into Eretz Yisrael is if somebody was looking for it, like somebody walking at night. You know, you can't see so well, you have to strain in order to see. You could see God's presence, but you have to strain after the Jews come into Eretz Yisrael. So, having defined that that's the motif of Sefer Bamidbar, this transition, says the Netziv, now we can understand the role of the two countings, the two pkudim. Ochein ikar ahefrish hazeh hayanikar b'shnei apkudim, shahoyu shnei inyonim shovim b'chomer ha-maisa, v'nishtanu b'tsuras ha-maisa, l'fi halichos Yisrael. The two countings, the one at the beginning of Bamidbar and the one in Parshas Pinchas, which of course is a counting of the, you know, the second generation, the generation at the end of the 40 years, they highlight this distinction between what was, you know, the past and the future. Shimhachi b'pam rishon ahoyah apiseder hadgolim midalid ruchos b'merkava l'shchina v'hoyah Ephraim rosh hadega v'kodem l'menashe. Moshe goes, Safi Bifnim, Perek Beis Pasuk Chaf. Writes the Netziv just to take one example of a difference, which again, you have to look to see the difference. In the counting over here, Ephraim comes before Menashe. In Pinchos, Menashe comes before Ephraim. Why the difference? So says the Netziv, because it's linked to the idea of the Degolim, which is also the flags, which is also in this week's Pasha. In the Degolim, Ephraim led, you know, ahead of Menashe. So in the census, he's also ahead of Menashe, to indicate that the census shows the people which is traveling with the Degolim. The Degolim represent how they're traveling with the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By the time we get to the second generation, the Degolim are gone. And the, you know, Menashe just is the Bechor. He's the, you know, the older one. Older than Ephraim, when we speak about Menashe in terms of the Chalukas HaOretz, in terms of dividing up Eretz Yisrael, he's older than Ephraim. So that special inyan of the Degolim has already dissipated. And again, in that subtlety, does Ephraim go before Menashe? Does Menashe go before Ephraim? You know, that's carried out. The old Bipkudei Pashas Bamidbar, Hayu Arashim Uchrochim Lios Meyosu Hashevet. Lokein Hayu Bipkudei Pashas Pinchas Kosh Gosavdi Bifnim Aleph Mikra Beis. Right, so again, you know, who were the heads of each you know, of each shevet? So we see that by Pashas Pinchas, those who are dividing up the land are not necessarily the Nasiim. Right here, you know, to be a Nasi is to be the head of the shevet, because to be the Nasi is to be you know, aligned again with the Degolim. Mishum Hachi Roshum Zel Yinin Meod Ad Shiro Chazal Ikro Shein LaHasefer Chumash Hapkutim. In any case, you know, the two acts of census mark off, in a sense, the two extremes of the Sefer, setting the tone for the door that left Mitzrayim, and then setting the tone for the new door that's going to come into Eretz Yisrael. The Pkudim are not just important in their own right, the Pkudim stress that idea of transition, of change, which is part and parcel of what the Sefer is all about. Hence, Chazal zero in on the idea of the Pkudim, of expressing the essence of what Bamidbar is about. Bamidbar is a Sefer of transitions. And then based on that, says the Netziv, you can understand what on the surface is very perplexing Chazal. V'anir d'al pizah kavona amu Chazal b'shabes dach kuf tezvav d'vayihi bin soa ha'orom u'sefer b'fnei atzma. Chazal expressed the idea, as we know that in Parshas Baalotcha, there are two inverted nuns that enclose two very famous psukim. Ahibin saw ha'oran v'yomer Moshe kum Hashem yafutzu oivecha v'yanusu mesanecha v'yiponecha uvnucho yom ha'ashuv Hashem ruvavos alfei Yisrael. When the Aron traveled, Moshe would say, rise up Hashem, and when the Aron came to rest, Hashem would say, come back and be amidst the myriads of the Jewish people. Right, as we know in Parshas Baalotcha, those two psukim are encased in inverted nuns. The Gemara in Shabbos makes an extraordinary comment. Says the Gemara, those two psukim encased in those inverted nuns are actually a separate sefer. And there are seven svarim in the Torah, right? There's, you know, Bereishis, Shmos, Vayikra. There's Bamidbar up until the inverted nun. There's the two psukim, which is a sefer in its own right. And then there's Bamidbar on the other hand, on the other side, Bamidbar 2, on the other side of the inverted nuns. And then Devarim, Bamidbar is really three svarim, really seven svarim in the Chumash. And of course, you read such a statement and you say, well, what does that mean? What do you mean? Bamidbar is really three svarim, and one of the svarim is only two psukim long? Well, what on earth does that mean? So it says in its sieve, what it means is as follows. Lilamdeinu, Ba'asher ki ascholas hashinoi hoyam in vayi ha'am kimis onanim. The change, the transition, already begins immediately after that little parsha, vayi bin so'ah ha'orah. Right after that, you have Perek Yud Aleph, vayi ha'am kimis onanim. The people start complaining against Moshe and the Ribbono Shel Olam. What happened over there? The people start complaining against Moshe. All of a sudden, immediately they start complaining. Boom, comes the fire. And, you know, starts killing people. why does the fire come right away? So says the Nitziv, because that was the Madrego they were on at that point. They were on a Madrego closest to Hashem. Usvivav Nisarol Me'od, right? Around the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's, you know, to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to be subjected to the Midas HaDin, to be subjected to the, you know, to the attribute of divine judgment. So, you know, the people complain and boom, they're punished right away. And that bothers them. Right? They start complaining, how is it that we're so close, that the slightest infraction brings down God's anger on us immediately? The people are nervous about this closeness to Hashem. And ultimately that begins the feeling within the people that they want to distance themselves a little bit from Hashem. They're too close for comfort. They send miraglim into Eretz Yisrael to see whether the existence in Eretz Yisrael is going to be quite the same kind of existence that they have now. They're not so satisfied with what they have now. The beginning of that transition happens in Perek Yud Aleph, when the Jewish people start becoming uncomfortable with the constant presence of Hashem. They then sin multiple times, right? The Meraglim, the Pasha of Korach, right? And ultimately, because of these sins, they die out, and the new generation, which lacks that sense of closeness to Hashem, comes in. The Im came. If that's so, Parsha Zo Kitano, this little Parsha, by Ibn Soha Ha'orah, this little parsha, this two pasuk long parsha, is an important transition point. It serves as the boundary, the mechitza, between the first section of Bamidbar, where God's presence is with the people in all of its fullness. The census, the degolim, the shiluach min ha-machaneh, right? We're going to read about the tsaruah, the zav, the tamei lo-nefesh. They're all sent out of the machaneh. You know, God's presence is so much with the people that, you know, if a woman is unfaithful to her husband, she's going to be punished. That's the theme of Sota. Sota is based on the idea that Hashem's hashkacha is readily apparent. And the Nazir is incredibly close to Hashem. That's what a Nazirus is all about. And the Mishkan is dedicated. And, you know, the people are ready to travel into Eretz Yisrael, and they're making Chatzotzeris. If you read the entirety of the first 10 prokim of Sefer Bamidbar, right up until Vayhi Ben Soha Ha'aron, it's all upbeat, it's all positive, it's all about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence is amidst the people in the most glorious kind of fashion. And then immediately after that transition, Vayhi Ben Soha Ha'aron, things start to go downhill, and we see a gradual eroding of that sense of closeness that the people have to Hashem, which starts in Perek Yud Aleph and Sefer Bamidbar. It carries through Miriam speaking against Moshe, the Meraglim, the Adas Korach, you know, all of the various things which are described there, all the way through the end of the 40 years, when the people are already losing, you know, that sense of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, you know, Vayhi Ben Soha neatly divides the Sefer into two parts. It's like, you know, before and after. Before, when the people are close to Hashem. After, when the people start veering away and losing that sense of ultimate closeness to Hashem. Ad shekol chelek echad min haSefer hu Sefer b'fnei atzmo. Right? So that's what Chazal mean, that Sefer Bamidbar is really divided into three parts. There's the before, there's the after, and then Vayhi Ben Soha Ha'aron uvenucho is a way of in a very short way describing the transition itself. The Aron moves, and then the Aron rests. And that, you know, that symbolism of the Aron moving and God's presence being with the people, and then suddenly the Aron resting, and Moshe has to say, Shuvah Hashem Rivavos Alfei Yisrael, come back Hashem to the Jewish people, because the Shechina in a certain sense is no longer there. The Aron has rest, it's stopped. The glory is not there in its fullest sense. Those two psukim serve as the transition between part one and part two, and that's what Chazal are hinting at when they speak about the three svarim that are really there in Sefer Bamidbar, is to indicate that Bamidbar itself is a story of transitions.
Right? So that's the Netziv's introduction to the whole Sefer. That what we should look for as we go through the Sefer is to see change. You know, this is not a Sefer that's about stability. This is a Sefer that's about how things change, and change in a bad way, because essentially, you know, they lose, the Jewish people lose the sense of closeness that they had to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the beginning of the Sefer. I just want to point out from the Parsha itself two beautiful comments that the Netziv makes. First, in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Lamed Tes, the Chumash has just counted the Levium, and the sum total of the Levium, again starting from Levium who were a month old, is 22,000 males. Now the Ramban in particular has a comment over here that the Ramban says it's very odd, the number of Levium is substantially less than the numbers of the members of the other Shvatim. I mean, just, you know, to take by way of example, if you look in Perek Aleph, where it talks about Bnei Reuven, right? Reuven was 46,500, right? Shimon was 59,300, right? All the numbers are up there, you know, in that general vicinity, right? Yehuda 74,600, you know, numbers in the 40,000s, you know, the 70,000s, and here come the Levium, and they're 22,000, and it's even further skewed than that, because the other Shvatim were counted from the age of 20 and up. The Levium were counted from the age of a month and up. So you expect, if anything, there should be a much bigger number of Levium than there are of the other Shvatim, and yet we find it's exactly the opposite, right? The Levium were tiny vis-a-vis the rest of the Jewish people. How do you account for that, says the Ramban? I mean, if anything, the Levium were, you know, a shaven of Kedusha. You would expect that they would have more people, right? So he quotes this Ramban, and the HaMikdavar himself makes two comments to try to answer this question that bothered the Ramban. How come there's so few Levium? He says as follows on the Ramaskol Shtayim VeEsrim Elof. HaRamban is Orel Amispar Amud Hamuot BeLevium VeNira Shegam BeMitzrayim Hema Hayu Merkava LaShchina. Even in Mitzrayim, as we know, the Levium were set aside as a special Shevet that had a connection to HaKadosh Baruch. For instance, now the Rambam tells us that the Shevet Levi was careful about Bris Milah in Mitzrayim. And the other Shvatim, you know, ignored Bris Milah while they were in Mitzrayim. The other Shvatim had to be circumcised in anticipation of the Korban Pesach. But Shevet Levi stuck to the idea of Bris Milah in Mitzrayim. Shevet Levi, our tradition has it, you know, didn't work. They didn't take part in the Avodas Perach. They observed Shabbos even when the other Jews weren't able to keep Shabbos. They had this connection to Hashem even in Mitzrayim. But because they were so close to Hashem, even in Mitzrayim, that's why they were so few in number. Why? For one reason, the Sviva Nisara Me'od, Alkei Nenshu Mahir Alei Ze'ova. Again, ironically, because the Levium were so close to Hashem, Hashem is medactic, he's very exacting with those people who are close to him. Bikrov Ayakodesh. And for that reason, the Levium would often die, you know, prematurely, the Netziv says, because God would punish them very severely for some sin which they had committed. The closer that they were to Hashem, that actually led to a diminishing of their ranks. V'gam ki hema yodu ki kodem atan Torah ma'u chet v'avon shelo zehu ratzon Hashem. V'kiblu aleihem ol Torah mitzvos kemo ha'avos. V'nasu kemo neda asher b'ha'avos so nechshav l'chet kemo shekosavdi sefer Bereishis. Ma she'em kin kol Yisrael yodu ma'umad matan Torah v'lo kiblu aleihem kol dvar Bereishis. Again, along the same line, says the Netziv, ironically, the rest of Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim were kind of like what they call today, Tinoko Shenishbu. They didn't know any better, right? They weren't that observant. So, mimela, there was a limited number of sins they could do because they hadn't really accepted the whole concept of Torah mitzvahs upon themselves. Ironically, because the Levium in Mitzrayim did accept much greater stringencies upon themselves. They accepted a whole system of Torah mitzvahs upon themselves, so that also led to them being punished much more severely because, you know, if you're going to sign up for the team, you're expected to, you know, if you're going to join the big leagues, you're expected to play like you're in the big leagues. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again, was very exacting with them because they had taken all these extra responsibilities upon themselves. Right? So that's the first thing. It's a little bit of a depressing thought, I guess, on some level, right? And the more halig you are, the more HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to knock you down. Right? But as he says, that's one possibility in terms of understanding the the relatively low numbers of the Levium. Then he says the second pshat. And again, it's not for me to weigh in pshat one, pshat two, but certainly pshat two makes you feel a lot better for what that's worth, when we think about the low numbers of the Levium. Shenis, the chol ha-meshubach gidulo yakar v'kosho latseis el hagmar. The more praiseworthy something is, the more difficult its growth process is, and the longer it takes for that item to really blossom and flourish. The things that are not that worthwhile, you can finish off early on. The things that are meaningful take a long time to bring to their ultimate fruition and accomplishment. Kemo eitz maicho, she'eno memayr gidul kemo ilan yisrak. Take a fruit tree, says the Nitziv. You plant a fruit tree, till the fruit tree produces its fruit, it's a long time. Right? Till it produces edible fruit, or really edible fruit, it's really a long time. That's the Ramban says, that's pshat in orla. Why can't you eat the fruit of the first 3 years? So says the Ramban, because for the first 3 years, the fruit is lousy. So you want to bring the first fruit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but you can't do that for the first 3 years, because the fruit is lousy. So you have to wait for the fourth year for the fruit to be good, to bring it up to Yerushalayim as Revoi. Right, because you want to bring the first fruit and dedicate it to Hashem, and it's going to take 3 years of fruit before you're going to have decent fruit that you can bring to Hashem. So no, after starting the fifth year, you can eat it already. Right? But the fruit tree, which has the most to show for itself, has a very long process till you get to fruition, literally. As opposed to Ilan Yisrak, as opposed to non-fruit trees, you plant them, they grow, and they're good to go, right? They're usable at a much earlier stage in their development. The more chashuv something is, the more time it takes for that thing to blossom. V'ha'odam eitz hasadim. People are just like trees, as the pasuk alludes to in Devarim. Kol mishet suraso gavoa mechaveiro gidulo kasha umisacher. Somebody should take this line from the Nitziv and distribute it to all the yeshivas, right? Because this would reassure many b'nai yeshiva. The more chashuv a person is, right, the more complete he is as a human being, to that extent, the process of his growth is that more tortuous and delayed, right? The guy who blossoms early doesn't necessarily become the greatest person. The guy whose development is tortured and takes a long time and has ups and downs, and everybody looks at him and says, oh, he's a late bloomer. Yeah, the late bloomer is the one who's going to bloom the best, says the Nitziv. Mishum hochi klal Yisrael me'avram avinu asher ba'alu Mitzrayim l'par b'rabu kol kach. That's why, if you notice, klal Yisrael do not really reproduce in great numbers till they come down to Mitzrayim. From Avraham Avinu to the time they come down to Mitzrayim, they produce a family of 70 people. There's some, if you think about it, by the time they're coming down to Mitzrayim, it's already five generations since Avraham Avinu. We probably know people who in five generations have more than 70 descendants. Right? I mean, you think about it, that's 70 people, that's a lot. No, it's not for five generations, right? That's not a lot of people at all, actually, relatively speaking. After five generations, the Klal Yisrael should have been hundreds of people, right? that's intentional, says the Nitziv, because anything beautiful like Klal Yisrael takes a while to get off the ground. They don't reproduce so quickly. They don't explode so quickly. In Mitzrayim, that's when they were perfected, or at least, you know, they reached a certain stage of perfection. That's when they began to have this population explosion, because they were ready for it. Ubnei Levi is Achru Od Yoser. But the Bnei Levi, the Shvitz, the highest part of Klal Yisrael, they needed even more time to cook, even more time to grow and become everything that they could become. So even in the Midbar, the Bnei Levi just didn't have a population explosion because they weren't ready for it yet. The Bnei Levi's time had not come. They would come into Eretz Yisrael, and then there'd be a lot of Levim, there'd be a lot of Kohanim. But, you know, they needed more time to ripen precisely because they were, you know, they were the greatest of all of the Shvatim.
Right.
No, exactly. So the Ramban himself suggests that. The Ramban says that the Shisha Bekeres Echad, you know, the six who were born every time they had a pregnancy, that was only for the rest of Klal Yisrael, right? But for Bnei Levi, not part of the Shibut, they didn't have that nest. And he says, witness the very family of Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Moshe, Aaron, Miriam. Wait a minute, there should have been 18 kids in that family, right? I mean, if it's Shisha Bekeres Echad, so what happened to Moshe's five siblings? Right? How come we never read about them in the Chumash? What happened to Miriam? And you know, there should have been 18 kids in that family. So obviously Bnei Levi were different, says the Rambam. Right? So that's the terms the Rambam himself gives. The Nitziv is going in a different approach, you know. Right. 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 No, 100%. I mean, that also answers the question. The Rambam himself suggests that. But, you know, the Nitziv, perhaps because he's just answering in a more pshat kind of sense, again the idea of Shisha Bekeres Echad, you know, is more of a midrashic interpretation, maybe he wants to stick with pshat, you know, so, you know, on that level he's saying, even if you don't go with the Shisha Bekeres Echad idea in general, you know, here's another way to understand why the Bnei Levi, relatively speaking, just didn't explode in quite the same way that the rest of Klal Yisrael did in terms of their growth. One last, again, beautiful point from the Nitziv. So, this is classic Nitziv. One of these things that, I don't know, I've read this parasha many, many times. This never struck me. But the Nitziv makes, you know, makes a big deal about this. If you look in Perek Dalet, Pasuk Vav, Perek Dalet is describing how the different groups of Levim are carrying the various clay ha-mishkan, how they're transporting them, you know, when the mishkan has to move from place to place. Right? So it talks about how there were coverings that they put on each of the kelim. So in Perek Dalet Pasuk Vav, it describes how they would cover the aron. V'nasnu alav kisui or tachash. They would cover the aron with the skin of the tachash, again, tachash, whatever it is, some kind of animal that, you know, that's described in the psukim, they put skin on top of the aron, ufarsu beged klil tcheles milamala, and then they would put a cloth with a color of tcheles on top of the skin, right? So it was covered over in skin, and then blue cloth on top. Al shulchan aponim, on the shulchan yifrisu beged techeles, they would first put a blue cloth, right, and then upars pasukches uparsu aleim beged tolash shani, they would put a crimson cloth on top of that, on top of the other, you know, kalim that were part of the shulchan, v'chisu also b'michsei or tachash, and then they would put a skin on top of that. So look at the difference. The aron has skin on top and then cloth. The shulchan has cloth on top and then skin. And let's keep reading. V'lochu beged cheles v'chisus menorah samor. Right? They would take a blue cloth and put it on top of the menorah. And then v'nosnu al sav yeskol keileha el michsei or tochash. And then they would take a skin and put it on top of the cloth which was on top of the menorah. And if you go through the rest of the kelim, the only keli which has skin and then cloth on top is the aron. All of the rest of the kelim have it reversed. All of the rest of the kelim have the cloth on top of the keli, and then the skin on top of that.
Why is that?
You know, what's the significance of the skin? What's the significance of the cloth? Why would it be different in the aron versus the other kelim, right? So I never noticed. Like, go through the chumash, you know, I don't know how many times I'm going through the parshas haShavua. I never even noticed that. You know, you get to this point in the chumash, you just kind of you read it, you know, and whatever. But that's the Nitziv points out. So what's the story with that? So the Nitziv comments, Yeshli in Pasuk Vav, Yeshli spawning al shinoi hakisuyim ve'ofani hakipul shebein kol echad ve'echad. Right? You know, this bears investigation. So he says, ve'inyon the beged tcheles mara al hanhogo lemailo min ha-teva. The blue cloth signifies God's dealing with the world in a way that goes beyond teva, that goes beyond the natural, God's supernatural involvement in the world. After all, the kisei hakavod has that blue color to it, right? I mean, we look at the tcheles and the tzitzis, we're supposed to be reminded ultimately of the kisei hakavod. You know, tcheles reminds us of things that are beyond this world, things that are miraculous and supernatural. V'or tachash, in contrast, the skin the skin was just like a rough cover to protect from the elements. In other words, the skin represents everything that's this worldly, that's natural. You know, we're not looking beyond this world. It's a very utilitarian kind of cover just to protect it from nature. Right? So says the Nitziv, may atonovin the kol klei ksharis kol echad more al prat. Yeah, you know, we know that each of the kelim teaches us about a certain idea. The shulchan teaches us about malchus. The mizbeach teaches about kohuna. The menorah talks about pilpula shel Torah. The kol elu, all of these ideas. Afo gav shemekar lo milo bekodesh vashkocha pratis al kol misnase bi Yisrael. Even though ultimately malchus, kehuna, and even, you know, depth and Torah understanding all derive from Hashem, nonetheless, if you ask, you know, certainly the way we look at the world, you know, for a person to excel in these realms, to become a big Talmud Chacham, to excel in malchus or kahuna, you can get the malchus or kahuna through heredity, but whether you excel in the kahuna or malchus, we think that those are ultimately things that the person himself, you know, is responsible for. That's your hishtadlus. You want to be a good kohen, so you have to try hard. You have to be a good melech, you have to try hard. You want to be a Talmud Chacham, you have to learn hard, right? And we see it as being a function of the person's hishtadlus. Right? That's why the tachash, the ur, was on top, because when you look at the menorah and the shulchan and everything they symbolize, from an exterior point of view, it's all about nature and applying yourself on a natural level, the skin. It's only when you look deeper that you see that there's an element of tcheles, an element of the divine, that we need siyata dishmaya to excel in whatever we're going to do in life. You want to be a Talmud Chacham, yes, you have to work hard, but you need siyata dishmaya as well. You know, you want to be a good Kohen, yeah, you have to work hard, but you need siyata dishmaya to be masliach in the avodah. The presence of God is there, but it's inside, it's not as manifest. Masha'en ken ba'aron. The aron is the exact opposite of this. Everyone understood that the Aron, which is the glory of Torah itself, was something beyond the mere natural. There's so many miraculous things associated with the Aron. Chazal say that the Aron is Einam min Amidah, didn't take up any room. Right? Chazal say that the Aron is Nosei es Nosov. You went to carry the Aron, it picked you up. Right? The Aron represents everything that's supernatural and divine. That's why, by the way, there was an Aron in the first Beis HaMikdash where God's presence was manifest more in the supernatural. In the second Beis HaMikdash, the Aron is not there. The second Beis HaMikdash was not characterized by the same number of miracles that characterized the first Beis HaMikdash. So the Aron, everyone saw on the exterior, was divine and supernatural. That's why there was a beged tcheles on the outside covering the Aron. Right?
Then why did you already need the skin?
Oh, so why do you need the skin? Because you know, despite the fact that the Aron was clearly a manifestation of God's glory, nonetheless, we pretended, there was an element that we pretended that it was, you know, that it didn't have all of these supernatural characteristics. What I mean by that, so we just said the Aron is no say, it's no so, right? The Aron would carry the people. Nonetheless, the people, you know, made it as if they were carrying the Aron from place to place. Why don't they just, you know, tell the Aron guy, go fly now, right? Now's a good thing. We got to get over there. So just fly. No, because you go through the motions of pretending that something is natural, even when it's supernatural. By the way, the Ramban writes, even by Kriyas Yamsuf, God made a strong wind blow the whole night. Because even supernatural things, God cloaks in a veneer to make it look like it's B'derech HaTeva. So that's the same thing with the Aron. It was clearly covered by Tcheles, but there was an element of Ur, of the natural world, which was underneath, just because we tried to conduct ourselves in a natural fashion in dealing with the Aron. Again, a beautiful insight into something which we never would have thought is even, you know, deserving of comment, you know, before the Netziv showed it to us. Okay, I want to wish everybody a good Shabbos. Next week, I don't think we're going to have the shiur during the week, simply because there's not much of a week. I mean, Yom Tov is already Tuesday night. What I was thinking of doing, and it's not doesn't help those who don't live in the neighborhood, but I was thinking of doing is that sometime over Shavuos, one of the Between Mincha and Ma'ariv sessions, I would dedicate to the Netziv on Parshas Nasa. It's kind of hard to get the tape for that, I understand, but, you know, it's... I think the best I can do under the circumstances, Sunday, Monday nights are not going to work for me to say the shiur, so you know, we'll try to say the shiur on Nasa over Shavuos, and then Be'ezus Hashem Parshas Baaloscha will go back to the regular Wednesday night shiur, you know, at the regular time. Okay, good Shabbos, everybody.